Welcome to the Longhorn live stream. I'm Bobby Burton. It's Friday afternoon. Time to join in Jerry Hamilton of Inside Texas and Ian Boyd, both of Inside Texas, actually. Guys, thanks for joining me today. We got a lot to talk about. Some news down in Destin, breaking from the SEC meetings. Texas has an official visitor on campus. Jerry and Ian, welcome in.
Thanks, Bobby. Good day. We got some our hot weathers here in Texas, so just in time for camp season.
So, Jerry, yeah, you mentioned camps. Tell us a little bit about Reiner Swanson. Let's start with him, the tight end recruit out of Laguna Beach in California that's currently visiting the university.
Yeah, actually, he just direct messaged me a little while ago that his hosts for this visit this weekend are Gunnar Helm and Spencer Shannon. I put that into our – we have a weekend recruiting thread on Inside Texas. Make sure and go check that out because the elite camp is tomorrow, June 3rd, for 25s and 26s. But Reiner Swanson, he's visiting Texas this weekend, will go to Oregon June 9th through 11th. Then he has BYU, Utah, and Texas A&M rounding out the five schools he's considering right now. There's a photograph of him last night with his family at dinner with Jeff Banks and Brandon Harris and members of the Texas staff. But this is it's going to be an interesting battle. This is his second trip to Texas. He has family from Texas. Some family lives in the Hillsborough area, I think Lake Whitney area. But, you know, he's going to expected to make a decision before his senior season. The reason that this visit's happening now instead of June 23rd through 25th is the family after that Oregon visit, shortly after that, is leaving to go on a European vacation for a couple of weeks. So good for them. But he's on campus right now, spending time with Jeff Banks, Sarkisian, and the staff. And he's the only official visitor this weekend. But there will be potential top targets in the 25 and 26 classes on campus tomorrow in Austin for the elite camp.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. Big weekend for recruiting. You'll be there, Justin, Eric, Joe Cook, all on site tomorrow for these number of top-ranked players coming in.
And Bobby, and it's a big week, even though Texas only has one visitor, the staff's going to be really kind of, I'm not going to say looking over their shoulder, but they're going to be looking around because some of the top targets are visiting other places this weekend. Corian Gibson at Clemson, a number of guys at Florida for their big weekend, Jaden Jackson, some of those guys. So Texas has top targets visiting other places this weekend, and that's expected throughout the month of June. So it's not only the guys in Austin, but the guys spread around the country making visits, especially in those SEC schools.
Hey, Jerry, yeah. Is Arch there for the Reiner Swanson deal? Or is he graduating?
Arch should be on campus. What was interesting this week, I thought, Ian, you brought up something else that we hadn't kind of brought up but we on the site, but the Manning Passing Academy is June 22nd through 25th this summer. That's actually the big visit weekend for Texas, so you kind of wonder if Arch is actually going to be at the Manning Passing Academy this summer. Maybe he just goes one day, but I doubt he misses Texas' big official visit week in the 23rd through 25th. But, yeah, Arch is on campus. All the players are on campus.
Swanson strikes me as, like, the top target to be his receiving tight end when he takes over in the, you know, whenever.
Yeah, I think him and Jordan Washington from Langham Creek, I think they would take both of those guys. Jordan Washington – where's he at A&M this weekend? Then he's got Arizona State before he has Texas. Alabama may get an official visit. We'll see on that. But yeah, I think Reiner Swanson, Jordan Washington are the two guys that have emerged for Jeff Banks and the staff at tight end. And they're both pass catching threats. Swanson is a bigger guy right now, 6'4, 235. Excellent soft hands and excellent body control, really.
We got a lot of stuff coming up today. We want to get to questions. We have a trivia question. The Longhorns baseball team right now is actually starting their game against Louisiana in the regionals down in Coral Gables. That was supposed to start at 1 o'clock today. Texas, the number two seed in that region behind the host Miami Hurricanes. We'll see right now NCAA tournament down to the final 64. Ian, before I get a question over to you, I want to mention our sponsor. And that's our weekly sponsor for the Friday live stream is Andy Ludicky, a good friend of the program. Andy is a specialist in placing people with franchises. What he does, he takes you through a process and allows you to choose kind of what you are good at and what kind of money and time you want to put into something. And then his algorithm and ability spits out a couple of different opportunities for you. So if you're looking to leave the corporate rep race, make sure you give Andy Ludicky a shout. Andy at myperfectfranchise.net, Longhorn grad, friend of the program for a long time. We certainly appreciate him. Ian, let's go to you. Down in Destin, Florida this week, the Longhorns find out that there's going to be an 18 schedule for the SEC for 2024 only. 2025 stays open. Okay. Furthermore, we learn that in 2024, there's not going to be an East and West in the SEC. It's going to be the top two teams go to the championship, most likely in Atlanta, I believe. Given that, what do you think that means for Texas? Do you think that's good for the Longhorns? Bad? Where do you come out on it?
Well, they probably were not going to move that Michigan game anyway, right? So it's probably generally good. I think a 9-game schedule is better in the long term. Give the fans what they want, you know, lots of premier games. You don't join the conference, you can keep playing UTEP, you know. But in that year one, it'd probably be helpful to Texas to have a couple of SEC bye kind of games just to help them find their footing early. I think, you know, the big thing is going to be who do they draw? I think we assume they'll play Oklahoma, of course. We assume they'll reunite with A&M and play Arkansas. But then that's still 5 SEC games that could come from anywhere, right? So I'm kind of curious to see how that schedule falls out to know exactly how it'll impact that season. But they'll have Michigan, who's probably going to be very good. And they'll have don't they have UTSA, that same schedule? It's going to be a tougher schedule than it's been the last few years, I think.
Well, my take on it is this is what – look, I know a lot of people want a 9-game schedule because of the quality of opponents that will be coming to Austin in that scenario. I'm going to tell you, I think that Texas needs a soft pedal going in. I have no problem with this because the out-of-conference schedule for Texas is unlike the out-of-conference schedule that most of the SEC – I mean – Charleston Southern and Tennessee Chattanooga are not on the schedule for Texas. Let's just be clear. They are for some other SEC teams. Sam Houston State, you know, Prairie View A&M. Let me go on. Okay, so I think that going into the SEC, that may be a way that Texas wants to go. Not that Texas needs to be scared of anyone, but look, I mean, it's an acclimation project a little bit for the Longhorns as well. I want to get to one thing real quick. That's a question. By the way, please get your questions in. We try to get to all of them during the hour that we have here. But first, I want to say this. Texas, I'm going to mention this one real quick from QWERTY. Do you think CDC and the UT boosters can do NIL deals for the D-line positions, DE, DT, and Edge, similar to the Pancake Factory, NIL, OL, to entice high 4- and 5-star D-line and edge guys to go to UT? The answer is yes, they can, and they already are, just to be clear. So it's not necessarily as it's not as uniform as the Pancake Factory, but a lot of guys at Texas are already getting NIL deals through UT boosters and the Texas One Fund. The reason I wanted to bring this up right now, the Texas One Fund had a fundraiser last night at the Austin Country Club. Not only was Steve Sarkisian and a number of the football players there, but also Rodney Terry and the basketball guys were there. Dylan Disu showed up. Vic Schaefer and the women's basketball team came by. And from what I understand, they all made pretty direct pleas to the Longhorn faithful to help them with NIL, because that is a determining factor these days, not only in keeping your roster, but also attracting new players to the university. So keep that in mind. Texas definitely trying to move to the forefront of that. Jerry, I have a question that I want to go ahead and get to with you. I don't think I've heard this. I think Texags is trying to make it so with Jimbo, but Ron Mexico, Colin Simmons and Micah Hudson trending to Texas A&M? Unbelievable. I'm going to say this. Colin Simmons isn't trending to A&M as of 3 days ago when I heard him speak personally.
Correct.
So, you know, whether Jimbo believes that or not, it's a different story.
Yeah, I mean, Colin Simmons is trending slightly to continues to trend slightly to LSU over Texas. But look, you know, when I was at Duncanville three weeks ago now, you know, somebody said, you know, he's going to stay very close to home. So whether it's LSU, Texas, maybe Texas A&M at the end of the day. But I really think it's LSU slightly over Texas right now, and we'll see where that goes. The interesting thing with Colin's recruitment, though, is, you know, he's got the official visit set to Miami, Oregon, and Texas in June. So unless he shows up at LSU, this thing's going to go into December more than likely. I think it is, or at least into the fall. So we'll see when LSU gets him on campus again.
What about Micah Hudson, Jerry?
You know, look, he's right now he's scheduled to be a December decision. I think Texas Tech and Texas are the top two right now, until proven otherwise. Look, I'll say this. How Evan Stewart likes it, the offense this year under Petrino and Fisher, that's going to be is big in a number of recruitments. I've heard that mentioned by two or three receivers, and all of them train with margin hooks, which Micah Hudson does. So I think, you know, those kids all talk. They all see each other. So I think a lot of what A&M's chances hinge on is what happens with Evan Stewart this year.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because I not to to take Ron Mexico or whoever as a little bit of a, you know, sidebar conversation here, but I don't see the Aggies with a lot of recruiting momentum right now. So, you know, we got to keep that real a little bit. Jerry, I want to ask you this question as well, because this happened last night. Terrence Hibbler Jr., the big lineman I think he's out of Mississippi, right?
Yeah.
He committed to Mississippi State and their new head coach. Michael Gresser wants to know what happened there. I thought it was Alabama or Texas. Did he cancel his official visit to Texas, or did he just go ahead and commit to Mississippi State?
I think as of right now, he's done, but we'll see. Look, so we said on Inside Texas, we kept saying word was it was trending Alabama, Texas, or Texas, but Inside Texas is not counting out Mississippi State. We said that for a reason. You know, in May, there was a lot more Alabama, Texas talk, but we never really counted out Mississippi State in that because he had been there so many times. There was a lot of pressure on Mississippi State to, you know, get him in the boat before these Alabama and Texas visits in June. Look, Cameron Beavers, the kid out of Bay Springs, committed to Ole Miss too, and a big-time defensive tackle. So those schools in-state are really pushing to get these kids in the boat before they go and visit these other schools, especially in the state of Mississippi in this class, because it's such a tremendous class of defensive linemen. Jeffrey Rush, defensive end tackle kid that was at Texas Junior Day January 21st, he's committed to Ole Miss too. So there is a big push by those two in-state schools to not let these kids continue to get on campus at Alabama, Texas, Georgia, LSU, and those places.
All right, I want to go. We've got our trivia question coming up, but first I want to get to this super chat. Les Grossman, thank you so much for this. I feel like the competition will be a lot better next season. With that being said, and that, I guess that means going into the SEC. With that being said, I want to see Arch get some playing time against good teams. Thoughts? Actually, I guess he's talking about 2023. Do we see Arch Manning more than four times as a true freshman?
No, not unless something went wrong. I don't know. I don't think playing Arch is really a priority. Like, if they want to win the Big 12 championship, you know, you're not trying to get Arch out there against good teams. I don't know that that's really that all that valuable to do that anyway. I don't know if he's the backup quarterback this year. So I just don't really see that happening unless something goes wrong or Quinn Ewers gets injured or bombs or something. Like, one time when I was very new to this, I asked Bob Stoops after the 2012 Red River Shootout if he had thought about getting Blake Bell on the game more, either to run against Texas or just to get some snaps late in the game because they blew out, you know, Texas by a million points. And Bob Stoops just stared at me and he goes, "Did you really just ask me that question?" and then just like moved on to another media.
Hey, and that was probably his favorite question today too, and that was his answer. So think about the ones he really hated.
I like,
He hated them all.
He got some that he really hated because he was all amped up and he chewed out one of the local guys.
Oh, yeah.
For saying that they were mentally soft when Kansas State had beat them. He's like, I guess we're pretty tough.
I tell you what, my take on it is I doubt we see them in more than four games. But look, I think it's possible. Texas did not have many blowouts last year, right, where they could get the second stringer in and give them time. I think that it's more likely we see that this year. Do y'all agree with that?
Yeah, but probably not against, like, good teams that are really trying to win, which well, I think Grossman was hoping for in that question.
I could see a scenario where if Texas is up 30 on Rice after three quarters, Malik Murphy and Arch get in the game. Because here's the thing. They both need game reps with the thinking that Quinn Ewers is going to go pro after this year. So they both need to throw a couple of balls in games and play a little bit this year.
And the thinking that they're playing Alabama the next week and Quinn Ewers went down in the last Alabama game.
There you go.
Remember that. All right, I want to say thanks to our sponsor of the trivia question. That's Last Stand Hats. Go to laststandhats.com. Use the code Bobby10 for 10% off. This is one of my favorite hats of theirs, by the way. I love this one with the hook'em on there. I've never seen it anywhere else. But Last Stand Hats has these guys, Bobby10 for 10% off. All right, here's the trivia question. Ian, Jerry, Bijan Robinson was an AP first team All-American in 2022. Prior to that, who was the most recent AP All-American first team Longhorn?
And for all you guys out there, I admit it, I was wrong. I guessed and I was wrong. So if anybody guesses wrong, you're not alone on this one.
Ian, it's not a run. Ian went running back and then punter.
Yeah, I didn't get it, suffice to say.
Let's see if anybody got this right now. I'm trying to look at this, and I'm asking Matt, our producer, to make sure he comes up with this and gets this right. Nobody yet.
It's a tough question.
It really is.
I really did not realize that this season had garnered that level of respect, even though it was a good season.
Well, wasn't it a COVID shortened season? Correct.
Yeah, it was.
Yes. That should give some people some hints. Let's see if we got it here.
No, I don't see it.
Still don't have it? I don't see anybody with it. Oh, there he is. I think Blake Bryant got it.
There you go.
What round did he go in? The second round?
I think he went second round. Joe Osai out of Conroe Oak Ridge. Jerry, Oak Ridge has another defensive end, Nigerian, I believe, that Joseph Jonah Ajoye, who is visiting Georgia, I think, this weekend. He's a big one that Texas would like to have, but I think maybe ending up at Georgia. But Joe Osai, 2020 Longhorn AP All-American. Again, special thanks to our sponsor on a weekly basis for this trivia question. That's laststandhats.com. All right, that sums up the preview that we had for today. Let's just get straight to questions. You guys ready for that?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's go. Let's do this one from Jarrett Johnson. With no formal group reporting NIL, how do schools determine the NIL worth of players? I actually was at a symposium this week in Nashville that On3 put on for the top 25, 30 football players in the class of 24 and 25. And it's pretty simple. NIL valuation actually has two components. One component is your roster value. Just like a pro football team has a roster value for your, you know, position and amount they can pay you, so too is that for some schools. Then you have a brand value, which is worth more on top of that. So there actually are groups reporting on this. There are companies like Open Doors, On3 reports on it on some levels, but really it's the free market. And so how do schools determine the NIL worth of players? The free market. That's how it's determined. And so it is not, it is still, the process is still somewhat opaque to talk to Jarrett and give him an understanding of it. I'm not saying that everybody knows what everybody else is doing, but it is getting more clear each and every week that goes by.
Bobby, I think we're going to mention the biggest issue right now for me is, you know, the agent's advisors are in control, and you don't really know what's out there a lot of times versus what they're saying. And that's the tough thing for these colleges, since there's no salary cap, since there's nothing like that. These guys can throw out whatever numbers they want, and you have to sit back and say, okay, do we believe this or do we not? And that's an interesting spot to be in.
Yeah, it's crazy. And the coaches can't be involved in it.
Correct.
So it's literally the collectives involved at that point.
It's Barter Town and Thunderdome.
All right, Ian, this one's for you from Matt, Texas, or MA, Texas. A lot of belief in Sark staff and the team in 2023. Expectations are 9 to 10 wins and Big 12 title game. If expectations aren't met, why? So why wouldn't they be met? Would Sark, Quinn, PK, RB drop-off, tackling, what would be the reason? Ian, you give a shot at this. Jerry, I've got an answer. You and I can chime in as well.
I think number one would be just if something goes wrong with Quinn Ewers. If Quinn Ewers puts it together and reaches like 75% of his potential, then they're going to win 9 or 10 games. Done. After that, you know, yeah, if the defense struggled without Gary Patterson, if they tried to change schemes or something and had some trouble, I'm not anticipating this. I don't think that's very likely, but I'm just trying to guess at things that could go wrong. They have a lot of depth and they have a lot of insurance in a lot of positions. Like they're really geared up to have a good year regardless. So probably next for me would be just if the interior line doesn't shake up well and just the overall run game isn't there. What do you guys got?
Jerry?
Yeah, I was thinking along the same lines. I just think Quinn's going to be a better player. Receivers are better, blah, blah, blah. We've talked about it. So I'm not there. I kind of wondered defensively if they, you know, I think Gary had a lot of input there, right? And so to Ian's point, if they maybe kind of change things up, like Ian said, maybe. It shouldn't happen. It's year three, right? But then, Texas should be great in special teams, I'll tell you that. So, I mean, better talent coming in the program. D. Camillus, I think, was a massive hire there to go with Jeff Banks. So it's hard to see outside of a slew of injuries at one position. You know, if you look at Texas, interior defensive line, they can't withstand a couple of major injuries there. I mean, that's where you lose depth. So to me, it's more injuries this year and how that could affect how they play.
I think it's two things, and y'all hit on both of them, okay? Particularly susceptible to a defensive end injury.
Yeah.
Baron Sorrell goes down. Texas doesn't have one edge. They have zero.
Yeah.
Now, not saying Ethan Burke and Justice Finkley are helpless or hapless.
Right.
It's just that's a brand new position at that point with no experience. Okay, so that's one. But the biggest one for me goes back to Quinn Ewers. And if he is just not productive, that would be the only way Texas doesn't get to 9 or 10 wins. They've got a good running back. They've got a great receiver group, a great tight end. And I think the defense, Jerry, look, they could be as good as they were in 2021, which wasn't good, and still win 9 or 10 games.
Yeah.
And that's – so yeah. I feel that is a little bit too much, right? Like, we're asking too much. They're not necessarily going to be perfect, but they should be better even without Gary Patterson because they just bring so many guys back, right? All right, thanks for that question again, and we'll get it going here. Thanks, MA Texas. E. Kim. A guy that is on these chats a lot. We appreciate him. Jerry, what Southeastern state should Texas focus their recruiting efforts in more with the SEC move?
So, obviously, when the staff was hired, it's Louisiana. Was Louisiana and still has to be Louisiana. But I will say, the more Brian Kelly wins, the harder it's going to be. And there will always be a guy or two maybe that leaves of those marquee players. I mean, Nick Saban was getting those guys out. But if Brian Kelly takes another step this year, that's getting tougher. I like the state of Florida, and I'll tell you why. Because none of those teams have gotten over the hump yet. Maybe FSU does this year in a weak ACC. But there's so much talent in Florida. There's so many of these high three-star, low four-star guys that end up getting drafted out of that state. You don't have to recruit the whole state because there's so many players there. You just have to recruit Orlando through southwest part of Florida and in the Jacksonville. If you do that, you can find two or three or four guys every year that can help your football team and help your football program. And now that Texas won some of those big battles and those kids aren't locked into staying in state right now, to me, that's really the state to focus. I think Georgia's tough right now. I think Alabama's tough. But I think Florida and Louisiana are your two. If you take away the neighboring states, got to be Florida, guys. I don't know what you think, Bobby.
I love Georgia because it's a single school state, yet has volume.
Right.
Okay. And the number one team in that state recruits nationally.
Yep.
So they're not just going for the top defensive lineman in Georgia. They're going to the top defensive lineman around the country. Now, granted, Alabama, Auburn,
Clemson, they're all knocking on the door.
They're all knocking on that door too. But they have different needs in different states as well.
Right.
That they can call home. Florida would be second. And I think it's because, I mean, I look around there, Jerry, and I got to be honest, you could find a first-round draft pick that didn't get offered by Florida, Florida State, or Miami.
Yes.
No different than you can in Texas sometimes, right? I mean, if you go after the right guy in Texas. And so if you have a good eval guy in Florida, just like Morgan Scalley is a good eval guy Utah in the state of Texas.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's a deadly that's a really, really good combination.
I jokingly always say living in Florida 6 years, I never went into a school where somebody didn't run 4.5 in that state. But I kind of mean it too, okay? Because those kids are fast and they're physical fast in football, and football's their way out in a lot of cases. So I love recruiting Florida if I'm Texas.
Even with the SEC move, don't you guys think that they'll still probably go West Coast?
That Sarkle always wants a presence in Phoenix and Southern California, for sure. Always wants that presence.
And it's a lot easier. Like, Georgia has a gazillion players, but they also have all the recruiting heavyweights. Whereas Arizona and California, you can say, hey, come out, get out of this sissy region and play SEC football. That pitch probably gets even better than it was in the Big 12.
And with USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten, where it's cold and wintry compared to the SEC, that could have a role in it too. I saw a comment from one of the folks in this chat very much about something similar.
Hey, look no further than Stein Metzger leaving UCLA beach volleyball program and coming to Texas, guys. Do you think the move to the Big Ten might have influenced him a little bit there?
I'm actually not following. Well, isn't Nebraska volleyball? Oh, beach volleyball.
No, indoor, not beach. But I'm just saying, look, when those schools move to the Big Ten, recruiting in Cal, I just don't think it's as attractive for those schools. I just don't. I mean, so, yeah, I think you can always go to Southern California and get players. And I think you're going to have more opportunity with those guys moving to the Big Ten. I mean, those kids don't grow up in cold weather states. At the end of the day, they just don't.
I want to, while we got some time here, I want to get to a couple questions off the Inside Texas message board. Jerry, this one's from TexHorn60. With Hibbler committing to MSU, I was wondering if Bo Davis gets a good read on the guys he is recruiting.
So does Nick Saban not get good reads either? I mean, that's what always my response. I mean, look, I mean, it's like you're not going to win every battle. And I would say Texas had the same read on that as Alabama. So, I mean, like an LSU. So, I mean, I don't know if that's a fair question to single out one person.
Gotcha. All right. Another one. This one from Hookem 89. With opponents for the 2024 season being revealed in a couple of weeks. So even though the SEC has now said this is going to be the format of the schedule, they actually haven't come up with a schedule. What SEC teams are we hoping to see on the schedule as away games, and which are you most hoping to see come to DKR in the inaugural year?
This is for fan experience, I'm assuming, seems to be the question, or for competitive advantage.
I think it's fan experience. It's what do you want to see?
Number one is A&M at Texas.
Oh, that's got to happen. That's going to be an away game on Turkey Day plus one.
You think it'll be at A&M? Yeah,
that's Bjork, the AD at A&M is all over that right now as some sort of victory, moral victory, I guess. But Texas doesn't really care, right? So yippee, right? So I think that's part of it. I would like to see Texas go to Ole Miss. I thought that was a great atmosphere. I'd love to see Texas play at Georgia, at Florida. I know those are some big time teams, but I don't want to see Texas go to Missouri. That doesn't do anything for me.
I think if you're at A&M, if you also happen to be at LSU at night in year one, that'd be a tough schedule. At LSU night is a great game for Texas fans, but you just hope it's not the same year as at A&M to start.
Yeah, it won't be. They'd have to flip-flop those.
They have to flip them.
Yeah.
I think that at Tennessee is going to be a nice that's a nice state to visit.
Yeah.
And it's I think that's going to be one. Maybe Kentucky too, not for the football so much as just the
I'm a little different. I've been to a couple Tennessee games, been to a Kentucky game. Tennessee's got 100,000 plus in the stands. It's still a more docile crowd.
Good.
In Alabama, definitely more docile than LSU. And I've only been to, I think I've only been to A&M games when Texas played them at A&M. And that's definitely more docile.
Right. Bobby, I'm shocked you didn't say at Vanderbilt.
Oh, yeah. Well,
5-minute drive.
Yeah. If you want that, that's going to be
and
your 25 closest friends, right? It'll be definitely an orange stadium if Texas plays Vanderbilt. I'll put it that way. All right, let's keep going and see what we're talking about here. A lot of people have questions in. Please continue to get questions in. If you do a super chat, we'll try to get you straight to the front of the line as well, because that's one of the things we got. Ian, this may be for you more. Where does Jamon Tapp stand on the depth chart? Is he anywhere near the two deep? If not, do you feel he is a portal guy after this season? Ian, I'm going to preface this for you in saying that I was told this is a put up or shut up year for Jamon Tapp. So,
yeah, I kind of thought he'd be in the portal after the spring game, honestly. He seems to be kind of buried. Didn't really make a big splash in the spring game. So he does not seem to be in the two deep as of yet. You know, things can change on a dime. If a kid, you know, really starts to change up something in a big way. Like, remember, like, John Harris in his senior year absolutely came out of nowhere in fall camp. But I think that it's going to be that kind of sudden emergence to see Tapp be an impactful piece of the 2D. There should be an opening. There should Ed should be open to be on the two deep, but right now doesn't seem to be.
Here's the thing for me, right, is he's got the ability. So it'd be one thing if he didn't have the ability. That's not what we're saying. He's just got to put it into reality, right? Same with Jure Bledsoe, right, Jerry?
Yeah, no doubt. And look, I think a lot of with Tap too is how good is Tasilia Kana coming in, right? I mean, the competition for Tap may not even come from a guy or two ahead of him on the depth chart. It could come from a freshman behind him. That's when you get pushed to the portal, is if you get passed by a freshman, right? And you're sitting there, we're third string, now you're fourth. If you're still fighting for that second string spot, that's a little different game than getting passed by a freshman.
Real quick, hey, this one's interesting because I grew up seeing this game a couple times. Auburn at Texas would be interesting. I saw Auburn play Texas twice in Austin, I believe. So that would be a definitely good one, Jackie, to follow up on. All right, couple other questions here we got going. We're still going down the list here. This one's a good one. Sergeant Single Shot. Do you guys think there's too much rat poison being laid down out there that our players might be feeding on? I would say yes, but I also say as long as that person eating the rat poison isn't Quinn Ewers, I'm not sure how much I care.
I'm a little, so yeah, I can see it. So here's where I come out. Texas hasn't won anything yet, so there shouldn't be. I mean, they won 8 games last year. It's been since what, 2018, since Texas finished the season ranked in the top 10, since they won 10 games. If there's any rat poison, you got the wrong players eating, man.
I think Austin, Texas, as far as Texas football has been concerned, has been one enormous rat trap for 40, 50 years. So I don't really think it's about, there's going to be a ton of rat poison. It's the nature of Texas. You're the premier athletic sports franchise program in one of the fastest growing cities in America. That's just how it's going to be. It's about whether the coach can, inoculate the locker room against it or not. And I think Sark's method for doing that has been, I'm going to have a ton of competition at every single position. So if you're choking on rat poison, I got another guy. Whereas like say Herman was trying to have a really, really tough demanding culture, but he did not have that same level of competition to, impose those kinds of consequences. Like Quinn Ewers, if Quinn Ewers bombs, if he doesn't show up playing the way they expect him to play, they'll put Malik Murphy in, the guy that everybody just tried to poach. They'll put Arch Manning in if he has a big fall. You know, it's just not the same as it has been. I think that's the real deal there.
I think the other thing too is, boy, Sark's commented a lot that he likes this team and likes the culture. So if these kids ended up not being that, then he misread his team. That's a bigger issue.
Yeah.
Fair. All right, let's keep going here. Thank you all for getting all these questions in. We appreciate it. We'll be getting to them. Let's go first to David Williams. What is more important, UT having 3 good interior offensive linemen or UT having a healthy and productive Jonathan Brooks the entire
season? Great question.
I personally think the center and guards have to be good.
I agree with David for sure. Because, I mean, there's good backs at Texas. There's multiple good backs, I think. I think Cedric Baxter's going to be a good player. I think Savion Redd's going to be a good player. I think if you struggled on the interior, you're going to struggle running the football all season, no matter who's at running back. I mean, that we talked about last year, you didn't have to block plays and Bijan could get a first down. This year, you have to block plays.
Ian, what's your take? Because I have a slightly different feeling on this than Jared.
Well, I bet I agree with whatever you're going to say. I would give the caveat of pass protection. Is that what you're going to go?
Yeah.
That's the one thing. I think that if the interior line is good, they could probably have Baxter, maybe Red go for 1,000. Maybe Blue puts it together. Maybe he could be a 1,000-yard. I mean, maybe could be a 1,000-yard back if the line is good enough. The passing game opens lanes. Somebody else is going to have to be reliable in pass protection.
I am totally with you on that. So I think it's pass protection. I would go here's where I think people undersell Jonathan Brooks. He wasn't the five-star like Bijan or Cedric Baxter, right, Jerry?
Yes, correct.
But he's been productive when he's in, and he's seasoned. They don't have another seasoned back that is a full-on guy. They even tried Keelan Robinson in the bowl game. He clearly wasn't the complete deal, right? I worry that Jonathan Brooks is the only back right now out of that gate that gives you everything. That's my only – now, overall, which one's more important? You're right. You know, it has to be not only pass protection but also run blocking, et cetera. But I think that Jonathan Brooks gives Texas just a little something more
there. It is possible, though, that Red or Baxter will be there after fall camp.
Yep. That's true.
But right now,
there's some time. There's a time lapse, right, Ian? And they could even be there four games into the season.
Yeah.
You know, when they start getting 10 carries a game or 5 carries a game and spill. Ryan Nelson, Super Chat.
Oh, yeah.
Williams-Brice is underrated. Jerry, I know you love that place over in South Carolina.
Oh, yeah, yeah. For people that don't know, I was a huge Steve Spurrier fan growing up. So, yeah, I went to a game over there. It was awesome. When they're winning – boy, that is a tough place to play now. I'll just say it. And we'll see if they surprised last year, but that's it's a tougher environment than people think.
I just don't see what they have that's going to differentiate them long term from the Georgias, Floridas, even a Tennessee out there.
Yeah.
All right. Jamie Tooker. Jerry, I know it's pretty early, but curious on your thoughts on Julian Lewis in the 2026 class. He's the quarterback that everybody loves out of Georgia. He is pretty impressive. How is Texas sitting?
Well, the interesting part in his recruitment is if he reclasses to 2025. He was at Georgia, I believe, yesterday. With Dylan Raiola committed in 24, if Julian were to reclass to 25, maybe Georgia doesn't make as much sense for the kid at Carrollton that's just watched them win national titles and play for national titles. We'll see on that. I think such a big part of that recruitment is, does he stay 26 or does he go 25? If he goes 25, I think all bets are off with his recruitment.
Interesting. All right, let's keep going here, guys. I want to say – let me go – I have to do this because I actually think it's good to insert some humor every so often. From Football Texas, I am glad officials don't have a transfer portal. I would hate to see Big 12 guys going to the SEC. Do we have a temperature about SEC officiating versus Big 12?
Yeah, that's actually a good question.
I'll just tell you what I've observed over the last 15, 20 years. SEC officials are much more likely to call holding, period. They're not – I always feel like the Big 12 errs on the side of offense – I feel like the SEC errs on the side of defense. Ian, I see you shaking your head. Yes.
Yeah. I think the Big 12 tells their officials not to call holding for branding purposes. As in, you know, tinfoil cap, but, you know, they don't call holding. It just doesn't happen. The Big 12 is very effective at teaching holding. It's kind of essential. But, I think also I've observed that you can get away with a lot more pass interference in the SEC than in the Big 12. They're not upholding an offensive, explosive offense brand the same way as the.
I thought what was interesting about the question, isn't the SEC going to have to add officials, though?
Yeah, they will.
Any familiar faces should end up heading east.
Well, I mean, that or – get them from the Pac-12 that's going to have fewer games.
Right.
You know, fewer teams as well. I mean, you just don't know at that point. All right. I want to go a couple other questions here from Aury. With the current roster, what are each of you the most excited about this upcoming season and why? Jerry and Ian, I'll get your takes next, but mine's the receiver room. Joe did a show yesterday for On Texas Football talking about who they thought the best receiver would be. for the Longhorns in 2023. They both, without hesitation, said Xavier Worthy. If he's healthy, it's A.D. Mitchell for me. And so you talk, and I know how explosive Xavier Worthy can be. So that's my take on it. I watched A.D. Mitchell three times in practice this spring, as well as the spring game. I liked him more every time I saw him. And that's rare for me. So I feel like that's the position I'm most excited to see. Ian, Jerry, you guys want to go next?
Yeah, I'll go next. Mine's interior defensive line, and I'm a broken record on this, but I think you know what Tavondre Sweat is, and I'm saying this, I think the receiver room's much improved. I'd have gone there initially. Quinn's going to be a better player with better players around him in year two. But if Byron Murphy and Alfred Collins look like draft picks this year, Texas has a chance to be really, really damn good, in my opinion. I mean, I think you know what Tavondre Sweat is. Alfred Collins was just up working out with Nathan O'Neill, our friend, the best D-line trainer in the business, and he said the NFL loves him just because of the length and the upside. But for Texas fans, that upside needs to start this year on the field, right? It doesn't need to start in 2 years. So my thing with Texas is if Byron Murphy and Collins look like third-round type of draft picks this year, Jalen Ford's going to have a hell of a year, by the way, behind them. And Texas should be really good up the middle on defense.
Ian?
I definitely agree with all that. I'm kind of excited to see Jordan Whittington finally have his day. I agree with you and with Justin and Joe that Worthy and Mitchell are the bigger-time talents. But there's a lot of production for a good slot receiver in college. And Whittington is just – it'd be really fun and emotionally satisfying to watch this kid have a big breakout season and really put up some stats.
I really agree with that.
I agree with that.
The emotional part of him having been through the ringer his first 2 years.
And if I'm Jordan Whittington, I'm talking to Roschon Johnson every day. Because where he has a chance is he's that physical mindset player. Somebody has to be help be that leader on offense. And I think he's the guy that could bring it. And if he does, that helps his value long-term. I hope he's took notes from Roschon Johnson all season.
All right. I need to say thanks to our sponsor once again. That's Andy Ludicky. Stuck in the corporate rat race with 2 weeks PTO and no control over the money you can make or your schedule in general. Call Andy. He will take you through a process to help find a business that will fit your skill sets and financial goals. Franchise ownership isn't for everyone. But if you have a desire to take control of your destiny, call or email Andy@myperfectfranchise.net or give him a shout 404-973-9901. Andy Ludicky, a good guy, has been helping us almost from the very outset. Jerry?
Yeah, I want to hit – we've had a lot of basketball questions before we get back to football. So people have been asking, Texas is after one more guard in the portal after Dylan Mitchell's return. Right now, Texas is going to be ranked around 15, 16, 17 in the preseason polls. Dylan Mitchell's a big deal. They're looking for 6'3", 6'4", guard with size that can shoot the ball. If they get that, they feel like they're cooking with gas and ready to roll because, look, offensively, they have all the firepower they need with improved rim protection. So we'll see if they get that last piece to the puzzle. Right now, they're sitting around that 15, 20 ranking headed into the season.
Hey, Jerry, real quick basketball question.
Yep.
Are they still going to run the Chris Beard defense?
I don't know that yet. I don't know for sure. I think they're seeing what the parts are. I think you're going to see elements of no middle defense, but they're going to be smaller on the backcourt, right? So are they going to have to attack a little bit more and try to push those guys to the paint where they're going to have better rim protection? I think that remains to be seen what they're going to do. I do think, getting another big guard is going to be key here, how they defend on the perimeter.
Fair enough. I want to say this real quick on baseball, by the way, guys. Apparently the game is not started yet because they're delayed by weather.
Yeah, there's a tropical storm rolling through South Florida this week because I used to live there. So, I still have it on the weather app. Expect delays all weekend.
I gotcha. All right, let's go to Aloha Traveler here with a super chat. Thank you very much. What is the scenario that sees yours not taking the next step? For me, the only way I can see that is if the Texas running game is absolutely dreadful, slash he's running for his life the entire time because there's no pass protection. Ian, Jerry, what is it that you don't see in yours possibly not taking that next step?
I'll go first, and I know Ian will have a different answer than I will. For me, look, year two is comfortable. Guys are more comfortable. He's going to have better players around him. He's going to have a guy that can go make plays for him instead of him having to make every play. But to me, it's a lot hinges on the first couple of games of the season. If you build confidence, he was playing really well against Bama, then he gets hurt. If he comes on, has a great game against Rice, which to him is very accurate, ball out of his hand, right time, right place, and then he goes in and performs well against Bama, win or lose, the confidence is going to go this. If he has a rough game at Bama, then you might have to battle through some of those cobwebs a little bit.
His mechanics, his footwork gets really, really bad when he starts to struggle, which I think really for all quarterbacks and certainly for Quinn Ewers, I think it usually actually comes down to knowing where the ball needs to go and having the right timing. I think when the guy understands what he's looking at and where he's going to expect to throw the ball and where to find it, then the mechanics follow. And when he doesn't, like you watch him throw that awful RPO to Xavier Worthy that was at like Worthy's feet in the Alamo Bowl, and otherwise it was probably a touchdown on a 4th-and-1 slant. Quinn Ewers gets to his drop. He looks up. It's not quite what he expected to see. And then he starts his feet get off. And then all of a sudden he's trying to, and he's used to in high school being able to throw from different platforms and get away with it. But when your timing gets bad and you don't really know what you're looking at, then everything starts to degrade. So I think it's mostly just how invested is he in the playbook and film and getting time in with his receivers, understanding what defenses are going to throw at him next year. If he knows what he's doing next year and he starts to build confidence, like Jerry said, I think the footwork mechanic stuff will actually decrease as a problem.
Yeah.
We'll see. We have every reason to believe that he will be a lot better.
I want to see him step up into the pocket more. I didn't see him do that enough in 2022. I saw him do it a couple times in the spring game, but not enough still for me in my taste. All right, let's go here. Jay the Activist, who is the leader of the defense this year? I don't think there's any doubt it's got to be Jalen Ford, right?
Yeah. But
could it be Byron Murphy?
By example, Byron Murphy, Jalen Ford by voice.
Or Jared Thompson's by voice a lot too, because he is kind of the ringleader of the secondary, the most vocal guy out there. Ian, you agree with that?
Yeah, there's different kinds of leaders too. There's like the guys that tell you what to do, the guy that rah-rahs, the guy that shows you how it's done. There's also good defenses often have the guy that will punch you in the face if you don't show up, if you're not. I'm not sure who that is, but they definitely got all the other ones covered.
I think that's Byron.
Okay. Man, they should be set.
That's a strong punch.
Who's
the right, guys. Compact who's, power.
Who's the guy you give the code red to? Is
All right. This is from Ryan. Assuming no major injuries, what is your threshold for a disappointing season?
8-4.
I would go 8-4 definitely. 9-3, depending on how that 9-3 looked. They got to compete. They should compete for the Big 12 title this year. And if they lose to Alabama, I would project to lose to Alabama right now. I know people are going to get mad about that, but they're not going to be the favorites going into that game. They're already not. And so that being the case, losing two regular season games in the Big 12, I don't know that that should happen to them this year.
Right now, disappointing season to me. I don't care so much about the record. You need to be hoisting the Big 12 championship trophy in Jerry World. That kind of pretty non-negotiable to me. I mean, if you have a major injury or if you have a major injury in the game, there can be some grace. But they have so many advantages over the rest of the league, they should really be hoisting that trophy.
Ian, you just brought up earlier about the depth at quarterback.
Yeah.
Talk about Iowa State's situation right now. I mean, they may not have a quarterback if this gambling stuff all proves out to be true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the league has a lot of, there's a lot of problems around the league. You know, a lot of teams are reloading, you know, and reloading in the Big 12 usually takes like 2 years. So,
well, Texas is going to play them at night away, most likely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big,
I mean, so that matters.
Yeah. I am a little bit, I don't know with Iowa State. I don't like to.
Iowa players will be betting on Texas in that game.
Oh. I knew. I can always trust you, Jerry, for a little sidebar there. All right, this one from Mark Schnell. Another coach told his Texas scribe that Brooks was the best RB in Texas in his year. I think that I thought that coming out, Jerry. I mean, you remember you and I like, talking about this.
I don't know that question. Is that best running? Oh, his in his year?
Yeah. Like, I thought he was better than LJ Johnson and Kamar Wheaton.
Well, okay. Yeah. Because the way LJ Johnson handled the recruiting process, as you know, Bobby, Ian, we weren't doing live streams back then. That irked the heck out of me. When you're a December high school graduate and you choose not to go, I question you in football a little bit, right? I mean, that's just a natural thing. And that has turned out to kind of be the case. Wheaton, you know, was one of those guys that, you know, if you're around and you talk to people around that program at Lakeview Centennial, you know, they brought up the love for football, right? And you never question that with Jonathan Brooks. I'll say that.
Yeah, I have no problem with that because he broke more tackles than the other guys, Jonathan Brooks.
And isn't that part of that, a love for football, just to want to have that guy, aside from just a physical freak, Bobby, not wanting to go down. You love football. This guy's not tackling me, right? Not the thought of I'm saving my body in high school.
He ran for like 2,000 yards and played both ways.
Yeah, he played till he cramped. He was Quandre Diggs. You play till you cramp.
He made a big mistake in coverage in the championship game.
And the final, that cost him the game.
Yeah.
But you know, by that time, I thought his tongue may be dragging the ground because he played every play, too. All right, Frank DeCluet, how many possible first-round picks are on the 2023 Texas team?
Well, just name guys and we'll see what we think. Quinn could be.
I would say Quinn, Xavier, and A.D. Mitchell.
JT Thanks. Sanders?
I don't see him as a first-round pick. I think he's a second-round pick. Pretty solid.
I think so, too. I think so, too.
Because he's not – he doesn't have the wide – thing about JT Sanders, plus athlete, plus hands, good size, but he's not bonus-sized.
Right.
And those guys are the ones at tight end that end up going in the first round.
Yeah.
Not a lot of 6'4", 250, 260 guys go in the first round.
And then he's not – Brock Bowers ball in hand.
Right. Yeah. You get my point, right?
Yep.
Ian, what do you think? You think those are the guys?
Did you say Gavin Holmes?
I did not.
I'd be the only other guy where if he just like locks people up and runs a 4-3, I'm just thinking of any possible names.
Right.
He may not even start. I'm just saying. That might be because cornerbacks, because you got to look at like who the NFL takes in the first round, and cornerback would be one of those spots.
I would agree with that. I don't know that Gavin Holmes is that good, but we'll see.
Probably not.
We'll see how that goes. All right. Y'all are making David Williams have a conniption over here, by the way. I don't know if you know that because he's so high on Terrence Brooks. He doesn't want to hear anything about Gavin Holmes. All well, right. I'm kidding, David.
Or he won't be eligible, right?
I'm kidding. Jerry's GPS, with the new addition of the coaches, do we get more block kicks and better net return averages, possibly punts returned for TD?
I think this is a great question, guys, because I thought, and I'm not just talking punts, but kickoff return, I thought Keelan was close late in the season. I thought Xavier, sometimes if he runs too east-west, could have been close. When you look at a team going from 8 to 10, 11, 12 wins, right, you normally get a kick return for a score that changes a momentum in a game, right, or early in a game or the wins a game. I mean, essentially, how many the great teams have you seen somebody return a kick or punt for a touchdown? I think more than I think when we people say special teams, they think of punting, kicking, coverages. I think Texas return game, if they go to the next level in the return game this year, if they pop one, that to me is a big deal when you're trying to build your program and take the next step.
I go back to my conversation with Cedric Griffin a week and a half ago now. We were talking about the importance of special teams, and we mentioned that Cedric was the first one to block a kick for a touchdown.
Yeah.
Field goal for a touchdown. You know, Cedric was like, you know, one of the things he told me, and this, I think this wasn't on the record on video, but he likes the fact that Sark likes to play his top guys on special teams. And I think that in part with the DeCamillis hire could really pay dividends for Texas. All right. What do you guys think about this? This one's from Ashton Holland. Do you guys like the 2024 SEC conference format without divisions and only eight conference games? We talked about the eight conference games. Do you like it without the divisions? Ian.
I don't know. I think I'm in the same boat as some of these SEC ADs where I kind of want to see how it shakes out with the expanded playoff.
That's it.
I think the SEC championship is going to be a little bit of a casualty in the new era. It's going to mean less because all the SEC teams are going to be playing for the playoffs. So I don't know how much it matters. I guess it's fine. I don't know that I care. I would like to see more SEC games in time, but you know, I'm with you, Bobby. I'm sympathetic to Texas not rushing into a 9-game SEC schedule with a trip to Ann Arbor.
I don't mind.
We just had one of the funniest things ever said on this. Somebody said if Michael Dixon was on this team, it wouldn't matter who was rushing the quarterback. And that's so funny and so true.
In a sad kind of way, too, though.
Yes.
All right. Jay, the activist, another super chat. Is Xavier still on punts? He was during spring ball.
And Jonte Cook was second team, I believe.
Yeah, Jonte Cook was also back there. A.D. Mitchell was returning punts. Keelan Robinson returning punts. So there's a kind of several of those. Ian has dropped here, so we're going to have to say, back. Oh, there he is. He's back now.
He's got an allergy attack up there in Michigan.
It is, it is clear. All right, we got time for one more here that I want to get to and mention this. Because I like the topic of DJ Dog 31. I'm excited to see the upgraded speed this year. Hill, McDonald, Derek Williams are going to be the future core of this defense. Is Texas going to be faster this year? I think they are. Receiver?
Yeah. Yes.
They're not going to be faster than Bijan and Roshan necessarily, but that's not Bijan's speed wasn't the thing. His style was.
Yeah. No, I think Texas is going to be faster. Well, I think the thing is with faster too, there's two types of faster. Faster in testing and faster to the football. I think Texas is going to be faster to the football defensively this year. Guys are older. Gavin Holmes brings that speed, right? Jalen Catalan, if he's healthy, is very fast to the football no matter what he runs. But as to this point, I think they're obviously bringing in more speed on defense through recruiting in the last two classes. Just look at the linebacker positions. Just look at the secondary positions. I mean, they're not just bringing in speed. They're bringing in long limb guys with speed.
Got it.
Yeah, where you could see that is if the pass rush goes up a notch because they just have too many guys on the field that Big 12 linemen cannot stay in front of.
Like Anthony Hill, his 40 times irrelevant when he sticks his foot in the ground and goes downhill, right? So his downhill playing speed is fast. And that's kind of – you start bringing in guys like that. Jalen Catalan is a very fast player on the field. You remember how Dat Wynn ran, 4.68? But he didn't – he looked like he was playing 4.45 when you watched him. If Anthony Hill turns out to be that type of guy, then you've got dramatically faster on defense if he plays fast.
I'll add this. Ethan Burke's faster than Oviagufu.
Right.
I mean, there's no – he makes up ground quickly.
Yeah.
Now, running the ball right at him, let's talk let's talk about that being a difference maker. But anyways, all right, guys, thank you all so much for the Friday live stream. Thanks to our sponsors, Andy Ludicky of MyPerfectFranchise.net, as well as the guys at LastStandHats.com. Make sure you use the promo code Bobby10 for 10% off all of your purchases there. And then also thanks to our guys that contributed via Super Chat, Les Grossman, Ryan Nelson, Jamie Tooker, Jay the Activist, Aloha Traveler. If I neglected to mention someone's names, I apologize. But most of all, thank you to Ian Boyd and Jerry Hamilton for joining us and being so gracious with their time. For Ian and Jerry, I'm Bobby Burton. I spend this episode of On Texas Football.